This is Kelly Edwards. I am here with
Teresa Smithson with Hanover County Voter Registration Office.
It is August 30th. All right, so first we have a few general questions. What is your biggest concern about the upcoming election?
Voter misinformation. Currently, there are third-party groups that are sending out, like the Voter Protection League, they're sending out absentee applications. And where we currently transitioned over to the permanent absentee application, voters are getting these from this third-party group. So they think that they have to re-register for that. And so this creates a duplication. And then sometimes it actually will remove them from the permanent list, because anytime an application is submitted, it supersedes the next one. So if you had already gone through the process and made yourself a permanent absentee voter, and then they get this, they fill it out and they forget to check that I want to be permanent, it now takes them to a single election. So that's going to cause a lot of misinformation. Also, Vote 50 States is another third-party group that has been currently sending out information to dead people. So the families are getting these for their loved one, which infuriates them, causes them heartache in the remembrance, and then they're calling and demanding, why did you send this? Well, we're not the ones sending it. The next question is, naturally, is, well, where did they get the list? I can't tell you where they got the list. And honestly, from as many of these as we've seen, I swear it looks like they've gone to the Bureau of Vital Statistics, got a list of dead people over the last 25 years, and are sending them to them. And it's infuriating for us, because we can't stop it. So right. we're hoping that we can get legislation in the next session
to stop it.
To stop it, because it just creates so much unrest with our voters. And it's not fair to them.
No, it's not. And that's awful too for people who have deceased loved ones, and then to start getting something, that sort of type of thing in the mail. So
yeah,
I can understand their frustration. Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, and personnel and training needed to run an effective election in November?
Funny you should mention that.
Okay.
So my absentee specialist, she went on vacation.
Okay.
And while on vacation in North Carolina, discovered that she and her mother-in-law have COVID. County policy requires that she stay out of the office for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So all of that responsibility now falls on my plate, because she's out. We only have 4 people in our office.
Right.
I'm 25% down. And so had she not had COVID, then we would continue. We'd be fine. Our county is very supportive in everything we do, and they give us the resources that we need to do it with. Our citizenship have really stepped up as far as becoming officers of elections, and a lot of them have been with us for years, even before I came here.
Right.
You know, we still have some of them, and we couldn't do it without our election officials. And so to answer your question, yeah, we have what we need.
Okay.
And if we do need anything, then I know that our county will definitely help us out and do what we have to do.
All right. The county election board is supposed to consist of 2 Democrats and a Republican under a Democrat governor, but in some areas, boards have had trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead, or another Democrat. What is the situation in this county?
We're very fortunate in that both of our political parties are very active.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they receive their notification that they need to submit the list of names to the circuit court, they're on top of it. And so we've never had a problem in that. and so that they are truly party purpose.
So is it two Democrats and one and a Republican then
yeah,
here?
And okay. That's what you'll always find in Virginia until after this next gubernatorial.
Okay.
They'll all be two Dems and one Republican.
Okay. What about precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans?
Well, again, we're very fortunate in that. And our demographically, if you look at Hanover County based on census data, the minorities, you know, we have a very small minority group in Hanover, but yet our minorities serving as officers of elections is well above what the census statistics are. And so we have, a lot of folks from the Republican Party each year, and I think it's January, February, they're supposed to submit a list of officers or their people who want to serve. And so we're able to get that list, get them in process. And so we have a good balance in Hanover.
Okay.
So the code also provides that if there are no R or D to make that balance, that you can put an independent in, or nonpartisan is what we call
right.
them.
Okay.
Because we don't have party designation in Virginia.
Right. Is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round or mostly near elections?
We're a team. We're okay. a tight team. And that's why we're so successful, is because whenever the structure of a general registrar's office is my primary responsibility is voter registration rolls.
Right.
We were in legislation provided to take on or delegate the duties of absentee and elections. So we obtained the Director of Elections title. So we're general registrars in the Constitution of Virginia, and we're directors of elections through legislative action.
Okay.
And so we take on that responsibility. At the end of the day, however, it is still the electoral board's responsibility to oversee the elections. So in the day-to-day operations, the electoral board will support me in whatever I need by going to county administration if needed. They come in, they stuff envelopes. They do whatever we need them to do, you know, pretty much under my supervision.
Right.
And then on election day, we're under their supervision, and it works beautifully.
Okay. A few questions on the voter roll. When was the last time the voter file in your county was scrubbed or cleaned?
Yeah, we go through the, we call them alpha roster, the alphas. And we go through all of the alpha cards in January after the dust has settled from the election. And we systematically go through each and every voter's card that we have to ensure that they are still where they are and that they're still an active voter. Plus, the State Board of Elections and the Department of Elections by law has to do what's known as a NCOA or National Address Confirmation. In which all of those folks that we flagged as potentially inactive, because if you haven't voted in two federal elections, you get flagged to make sure you're still there. And so also the Department of Elections is in like a consortium of states that shares information periodically. And so they help to identify any voters that moved. Because the last thing you think of when you move to Florida
is your vote.
Yeah, exactly. Now, they'll register to vote in Florida.
Right.
But unless Florida notifies us that they're down there, we don't know.
Right.
That's why it's so important to do that. But with that being said, with their the state's responsibility to identify those that are inactive, after, I think it's 45 days of no response, they go into an inactive status.
Okay.
Then after that, they're in an inactive status for so long that they will then be canceled if, again, they hadn't returned that national address confirmation. And so then all of the folks that were canceled, a list is provided to both parties so that they can follow up and check two. So okay. It's just a teamwork kind of thing that we do.
Okay.
Because the last thing we want to do is make sure that, you know, everybody's registered to vote. So when they show up, you know, we didn't inadvertently remove them. But that being said, if someone is inadvertently removed, you still have a provisional ballot.
Okay. So. All right. Does the health department, coroner, or Bureau of Vital Statistics send a list of deceased people to your office every month so they can be removed from the voter roll?
Yes. They actually don't send it to us. They send it to the Department of Elections, who then uploads it into the voter registration system, which they call BURIS. And so we get that population. We also get felons from the state police. Non-citizenship that folks have gone to DMV and gotten an ID and identified themselves as a non-resident or a non-citizen. So these hoppers fill up and we take action, but that's still ultimately my responsibility. So a case in point, gentleman goes to the DMV, you know, those little screens there, he's clickety-click-clicking trying to get out of there because he's been in line forever and a day. So he shows up as a non-citizen on my system. I know this guy.
Right.
I know he's a citizen.
Right.
It's at my discretion as to whether or not to cancel him as a non-citizen or make that decision to maintain his, and of course I maintained it.
Right.
And so it's still up to us to do our job.
Okay. When was the... And we probably just talked about this. I don't know. When was the last time the clerk of courts submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
I have no idea because we don't deal with...
But you're saying y'all do get the non-citizenship list from them.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we don't have a relationship with our clerk of courts on... serving as jurors.
Okay.
There are other localities that do.
Okay.
But we've never had that relationship. Our clerk of courts is awesome.
Okay.
And every now and then he'll call going, hey, can you check this one? And we'll do that.
Yeah.
It's a one-off.
All right. When was the last time you had access to the National Change of Address List? Or any other change of address list? And I think you said monthly they send.
Yeah, well, yeah. Through the consortium, you have, I think it's Eric and CrossCheck.
Okay.
And we'll get, and as along with mentally incapacitated that we get from the courts, all of this is filtered to the Department of Elections, then is pushed down to us so that we can keep our voter rolls clean.
Okay. Are you confident that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a lot of hard work.
I know it sounds like it.
It is.
How many households in your locality?
I have no idea.
Okay. You know which one I'm going to ask, the seven more.
I read that question. I was like, how in the hell am I going to figure out how many seven people?
Pretty much been the consensus.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in order to actually make that happen, we would have to take each address by address and search that. We have close to 89,000 registered voters in Hanover County.
Right.
Could you imagine the logistics of trying to sit down and figure that out?
No.
That would be crazy.
No, that would be. It'd be nice if they could do a system that would...
At the state level, be able to...
Right, exactly.
Well, maybe
but yeah.
Next system, because they're bringing on a new voter registration system.
Okay.
They've been going through this process for a while now.
Okay.
So maybe that'll be a bell or a whistle.
Yeah. During registration, how do you verify that voters are citizens?
Well, so often, right around this time of year, when people are trying to get their kids in school, a proof of residency for I-9, passport, it's all the voter registration card.
Right.
And the way that we're able to do that is when you register, we put your name in the system, it generates your voter registration card, and it's mailed to your residence.
Right.
So that loop has been closed. If it comes back as undeliverable, then you start scratching your head. Well, why didn't you get this?
Right.
The application also provides that if you live say, under a bridge and a man down by the road, you can still get a voter registration card. Usually these are, their address is to a social services type, a church, you know, something along those lines. But that's how we confirm that they're citizens. Now, keep in mind, too, you still have that scrub that you're getting from the DMV and from the state. So.
Moving on, concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and integrity of voting machines in the 2020 elections. There are three types of voting machines used in Virginia. I learned from last week's meeting that there's maybe like five or six, but I haven't been able to confirm that yet. But can you tell me which machines you use?
We have the ES and S, which is the election software system. They're out of Indiana, and our vendor that, because they make them, the equipment, Printelect out of North Carolina, they're the ones that sell that to us. And they have absolutely and zero to do with Dominion.
Hands
down.
Who calibrates the voting machines, and can you please explain the process?
Okay. Now, your term calibration, the definition for calibration is probably different than mine. To calibrate, the touch screen that is on the tabulator, to calibrate the touch, that's term calibration in my mind. I think what you're talking about is the certification and maintenance of these machines. So we have a semi-annual maintenance done. So in every federal election year, Printelect will send a crew of technicians to go through each and every one of those machines to ensure that they are correct. If anything needs to be addressed, they address it, such as a clock chip or a battery or something like that.
Right.
But that's the maintenance. The logistics and accuracy is done usually 50 days before every election.
Okay.
And that's done by myself and the electoral board. And we go through with a test deck that has the ovals filled in for each of the candidates and referendums, so that we can make sure that every machine is then tabulating the exact way it should. If we find any machine that isn't acting right, or it's just not working, we'll take it offline and send it to the vendor for maintenance.
Okay. So you do invite the party representatives to the
Everything's transparent. And also any independents. Like in this election that we've got coming up, we'll have the Republican and Democrat. We'll also have, there's three candidates for our Ashland Town election.
Right.
And they can also send observers to watch.
Okay. Are voting machines ever connected to the internet?
Absolutely not.
Okay. If they are not connected to the internet, then how and when are they updated? I guess we just kind of talked about that, but how do you, I guess, so do y'all use the thumb drive?
Yes, the thumb drives. And remember, when we do our maintenance, if there's a software update, which it usually doesn't happen, but because these machines only get used, you know, once or twice a year. Well, technically, it's going to be twice a year all the time now. But the software is solid in that it doesn't need updates. Like our computers, it's like every month we're getting updates.
Right.
With these, because they're standalone, they don't need that software update.
Now, when they come in to do like the maintenance, do they connect them online then?
No.
Okay.
No. It's all
because if they need a software update, how is, I guess people ask the question, how is it done without being connected to the internet?
Yeah, no, we don't need that.
Okay.
That's part of the misinformation, is that we're so systematically, you know, programmed to go, oh, I got to do my update. Let me get it from the cloud or whatever. No, this is all a very hardwire connected situation.
Okay. Many changes in election procedures were introduced in response to the COVID pandemic, and some people have argued that these changes weakened the integrity of the election. As an election professional, do you think the changes made and the election process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened election integrity, strengthened election integrity, or made really no change in election integrity?
It was difficult in making those transitions.
Right.
But I don't think it made a difference one way or the other.
Okay.
Simply because I say that is that we responded in kind to those changes to make sure we still had the chain of custody in place, such as with your absentee ballots when they come in.
Right.
Pulling that application, matching them with that ballot. The no witness signature was something that I never really had a real warm and fuzzy for anyway.
Right.
Because honestly, if you're sitting at home, you're by yourself, you're going to squiggle out something.
Right.
We're not handwriting experts.
Right.
You know, we can kind of look, you know. What the no excuse and the no witness did during the pandemic is that it caused people to stop lying to you in your face.
Right.
Because they'd be like, oh, I'm going on vacation. It's like, okay, write it down, vacation.
Right.
You know, and it's just, that was actually a really good thing that happened, was doing away with the excuse for absentee voting. Because for the presidential, we had like over 32,000 people come to this office, well, this complex, in 33 days.
Right.
It was fabulous.
Okay. Did you receive any funding or in-kind contributions for training, staff, voter education, or equipment, or any other purpose from outside the state of Virginia?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. That would be unethical.
Okay.
Did anybody say yes to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean
that's
to say
okay.
That.
That's okay. Yeah, no, you're fine.
No.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yes, they did. No, that's okay. Effective July 1st, 2021, Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballot for any election during a declared state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. How are you training your staff to ensure that there is the signature there? And that wording is a little weird. So that's, I think we're just looking to see if the witness signature's there. Yeah.
Yeah. My central absentee crew have been together with me since day one.
Okay.
And they are very detail oriented. You know, I have a very strong Republican and a very strong Democrat as my chief and my assistant chief, and they don't miss a trick. They will reject a ballot if it doesn't have the required witness signature. But the thing that you're forgetting is that we have to cure these ballots now. That's another fun little thing they threw at us. So when we get these ballots and it's missing a witness signature on it, then
you
we're
going to cure it.
Yes. And so that'll be me until my girl gets back.
Okay.
But yeah, we're very well versed in that.
All right. There's a lot of concern in Virginia and across the country about the security and integrity of the ballot drop boxes. What are the chain of custody procedures for ballot drop boxes?
I love this. Okay. It's like I'm on, I don't know, Jeopardy. It's like, I'll take drop boxes for 100.
Drop
when there was just an inkling of them might happen, we went out and bought a Dropbox.
Okay.
It's a very secure Dropbox. It actually, if you walked in the store, you passed it, there's literally a barbecue grill cover on it right now.
Okay.
So nobody can see what it is.
Okay.
We have 24-hour surveillance.
Okay.
The chain of custody during election time is that we will take a Republican and a Democrat along with my staff member, and they will go out, they will open the box together,
and
come back in, sign a chain of custody document noting how many ballots were in there. That's during early voting.
Okay.
On election day, there are drop bags in each and every precinct.
Right.
They're sealed. And the voters are allowed to deposit their ballot, no matter where they are in Hanover County, into these. Now, the problem, however, is that our voters in the Commonwealth think that a drop bag in Chesterfield is perfectly fine to get a Hanover County ballot. It's not.
No.
It won't make it here in time because none of these ballots come back to us until the day after the election.
Right.
So that would mean that Chesterfield would have to get my ballot and drive it over here. And we take that very seriously. And because during early voting last year, a voter came in and they, for whatever reason, they didn't want to put it in the drop box.
Right.
They just knew something was going to happen to it. So they come in and hand it to us. Well, my deputy, she didn't look at the front of it because we were so busy until the lady left. And she looked at it and it was for Chesterfield. I was like, you better get your keys. On election day. She drove that ballot to Chesterfield.
Right.
I mean, and that's, we had people trying to drop them off for, Abington up there. And you can't do that, so.
Yeah. Was there any time during the last election cycle when you was there any time during the last election cycle when your drop boxes did not have video monitoring?
Oh, no. We've okay. had constant video surveillance, even before they mandated it.
Okay.
So, like I said, we're always trying to stay above the, or in front of the eight ball.
Right.
Most of the time, we're peeking over the top of it.
Who is responsible for reviewing the video, or have you had to, and have you... did were party observers present during the review?
We've never had what would trigger a review of it? And remember now, this video is kept for I want to say a year because it's all digital,
right?
And so if there was ever a time that we go out there and see that the integrity of that ballot drop box mm-hmm. was compromised, that's when we start looking.
Okay.
So we have a 24-hour window in which we could target that.
Okay.
And it would be myself, the electoral board, party representatives, as well as our law enforcement and the IT security manager.
Okay.
It would be a total team.
All right. To strengthen public confidence in the integrity of elections, we hope to expand our observation efforts and have a few questions about election pages, nonpartisan observers, and party observers. Mm-hmm. Would you provide training and support or designate us to provide training and support for an election day page program as described in, I hate when I start going, in 24.2-604.3?
We actually have a page program in place.
Okay.
And we work with the four high schools as well as the homeschools to get the students involved. We've been doing that for years. When COVID hit, we stopped with this November's election and the uncertainty of it. We're not doing it this year either.
Right.
We'll pick it up again next year.
2022.
For the midterms.
Okay.
But yeah, and I would prefer to do the training simply because that way I can take on the responsibility of what you learned.
Right.
And hope to, you know, have that information out there. We do train the student pages on what they can do. I've recently worked with the Republican Party in Hanover to review their training material for observers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very fortunate in that, like I said, our officers of elections are party people. And he is my chief officer in the Beaver Dam precinct. And he's fabulous. And he's writing the training. So he and I have been collaborating on it so that they know what their responsibilities are, as well as our people know what their responsibilities are. So case in point, if you're sitting at the check-in table, they have to be within earshot, not necessarily visually, but in earshot to be able to hear, please state your name and address for the record. Or all they have to do is state their name, I think. No, name and address, and then the officer only repeats back the name so that they can hear and check them off their list. A lot of times over the past, before we had this collaboration, you would have somebody sitting right here. They can't sit at the table by law.
Right.
But they're leaning and they're like breathing their onion breath in your face.
Right.
And so we've had to ask them to push back a little bit. They're not allowed to wander in the polling place. They have designated spaces that they're supposed to be in. And because, you know, you have some that are just, let me use the word passionate, and they can be confrontational, and we've had to send them out. You know, you can't impede or inhibit the voting process. And if you're fighting with the guy behind you, you just impeded the process. So now we're really good about, you know, working with them on it.
Okay.
So yeah. The manual for poll watcher training that in Henrico County you've been involved in?
Not with Henrico.
I'm sorry, Hanover. Excuse me.
Yeah.
In Hanover.
Uh-huh.
I'm just asking that because I'm about to do the training. So.
Oh, great. Curious. Well, you know Ed Gooding then.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I'm new to all of this.
Oh, well, welcome.
Yeah. Like lots of people are new to all.
Yes,
but I am about to do the training.
Oh, good.
And I have a copy of the manual. That's why I was asking.
Yeah.
If it's this current manual that they
it will be.
Sent me.
Is it working through Jeff?
No, it's someone named Amanda Keys.
Oh.
That when I signed up for the GOP, I'm all new to being, you know.
You know, if you ever want to stop freezing on the outside, you can come and work on the inside for us.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Where's your polling place?
Mechanicsville.
Which, at the school?
The school, I don't know where I'm going to work yet.
No. I mean, where do you vote?
Where did I vote?
You came here last time.
That's right, because I did early.
She didn't live in Hanover.
I didn't, yeah.
She lived in Hanover years ago, then went back to Henrico, then came back to Hanover.
Yeah, wasn't the early voting experience just as easy as pie, even under COVID?
It was.
Uh-huh. I know.
It was.
32,000 people we had, 3 complaints. And 2 of them were just somebody had gotten up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah.
You know, it was just crazy.
No, I thought it went very well. Mm-hmm. What I witnessed of it, I came up here. Yeah, that's where I vote. Mm-hmm. But now I would vote in Mechanicsville High School.
I don't like calling that. Yeah, Lee Davis.
Exactly.
Let me tell you.
I was trying to be, you know.
The name hasn't changed yet, as far as elections are concerned.
Yeah, good.
Because when we send out new voter registration card, it says Lee Davis.
Does it really?
You need to change it. The school even called me saying, you need to change your name. I said, hold on. I don't have that kind of power.
Exactly.
The name changing comes from the Board of Supervisors. I got nothing to do with that.
Right.
I've informed them. They know. Hello. We're waiting for redistricting to make all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear too many people yelling at them. That's why they haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
We have had international observers come in before.
Mm-hmm.
What they usually do is they partner with the Department of Elections,
mm-hmm.
and they will have groups that will come through. For whatever reason, they love coming to Hanover.
Okay.
I think it's because I got an open door policy. But we've had internationals come through and just look, and I mean, we'll work with anybody.
Right.
The code section is very clear on who can be in a polling place.
Right.
And so we would take a look at that and see if they have the green light from the state, then yeah, we'd probably work with them on it.
Have your local party chairs been notified that they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it is open and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's great. I think we covered that in another question, too.
Yeah.
Did they send anybody?
Well, you know, funny you should ask that. That's very good. For years, we would do our logic and accuracy testing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I won't say which party it was, but they used to send this old fella out that he literally sat over in a corner and slept the whole time. He was a body. And that's fine. You know, and remember, our electoral board is representing these two parties. So if your party put these people forward to do this, A lot of the candidates are like, nah, you're good. You know, go ahead.
Right.
We trust you. And so there have been times, but it's been since the 2020 election that all of this turmoil has come up. We're starting to get more involvement from the parties. And, you know, and I'm grateful for it. It's like, come on in. We've got nothing to hide. Come and look under the curtain if you want to.
All right. Do you have publication that you provide to your election officials regarding rights and responsibility of observers?
Yes. Yeah, that we do. It's called the do's and don'ts.
Okay.
The parties, I send that out to the parties, and that's what you're going to be training them on, is the do's and don'ts.
Okay.
And so the chiefs and them know what they can do and what they can't do.
Okay. So thank you. The survey's complete. We deeply appreciate your time today and look forward to keeping in touch as we go through
well, that was too easy.
Future elections. I'm going to stop the recording now.